from the twisted realm of science and the darkest pits of reason comes chilling tales of godlessness. Bear witness to the unfathomable terror that is the Good Atheist.
Welcome to the GoodAtheist.net podcast. My name is Jacob Fortin.
I'm Ryan Harkness.
And today, all right, today's going to be like the good news show. You know, like happy show?
You always say that. You always say that. And then it gets all dragged down into the dirt with horrible religious stuff that just bumps
us
all
well,
out.
I mean, I was going to include a part of that, by the way, with this one woman who got raped and then she went to prison and they denied her the birth, like the after morning pill or something like that. But I didn't want to open with that story because that's depressing, even though I just did.
See, I told you, liar.
But it doesn't devolve into nothing because the news is so good coming on a whole bunch of different fronts that even if somehow we injected it with a mild amount of bad news, it would be overwhelmed by so much good news that's all you could really say.
So let's hear this good news, sir.
Okay, well, I suppose it's divided into a whole bunch of different parts, okay? Because it involves good news with good atheists, and then good news just around the world in our constant fight with crazy religious cults that have a lot of money and power. And, you know, one of the things that we've been talking about a lot over the years is the fact that, you know, in the new age of the internet, it's really hard to keep things secret, isn't it?
Yeah, with WikiLeaks and all that jazz out there releasing.
I mean, just the concept of leaks, right? It's kind of like the new gate. How we used to put gate in front of everything. You used gate in front of something once, right? What was it again?
It was this this fighting scandal where a fight seemed to be fixed, and we called it Standgate because the fighter was paid to stand up instead of taking another fighter who sucked to the ground.
Right, but if it happens for a little bit more recently, it would have been Stand Leak or something.
Well, sometimes I don't know. It all depends. Sometimes they're gates, sometimes they're leaks. They both have their uses. I don't think Stand Leak sounds more like what guys do when they go to the bathroom.
All right, maybe it doesn't work just because of like the unfortunate nomenclature, but that's not the point. The point is sort of there's been like in the age of the internet, it's really hard to keep information that used to be secret. I mean, like that's why one of the topics that we're going to be talking about is Scientology. And the biggest enemy to Scientology is information. I mean, just even the, you know, when the secret dogma of the cult was released, I'm sure that didn't do good things for it.
Yeah, once you realized how completely crazy they are with the whole, I mean, they're generally crazy. I got a couple of those L. Ron Hubbard books, like the initial like 1980s. Dianetics, check this out, here's what Scientology's all about books, and they're you know, they're pretty upfront with their craziness, but the Xenu volcano nuclear explosion thing is surprisingly nuts.
Right, well, that's one of the pieces of news that we're going to be talking about is how Katie Holmes leaving Tom Cruise / Scientology, because I don't know if we can separate those two anymore. And the second part is going to be a series of scandals that continue to rock the Vatican, pretty much giving it like a, you know, 1-2 combo knockout style. So those are the two things of the bits of world news, if you want, that we're going to cover. That's just tons of good news. But in terms of our own internal news here at The Good Atheist, I'm like, well, first up, the great news is that the Save Good Atheist campaign, all the stuff that we had worked for and we're building up to, even with the launch of the book, the we need to keep this thing going or daddy's going bankrupt, has been a success. So as of today, we are now over 100% of funding for the book, which I thought would take a lot longer to get to 10 grand, but it turns out I underestimated people's interest in this puppy. And the response has been explosive and huge. And it's been so good, in fact, that now we actually get to move on to a new campaign, which is what I call the book tour campaign, which is slightly more exciting because if the trend continues, even if it's sort of modest and people continue to go on and pre-order the book, I mean, either the ebook or the audiobook or what have you, or some of the big deluxe packages, which are going fast, by the way. I think there's like six spots for the $250 one there to get your face, and a few spots of the $500 one to get your face and a signed copy of the artwork. So they're going pretty fast, so you better hurry. But, you know, beyond that, what we're going to be able to do if we keep that modest curve is we're going to be able to do a tour. Well, at least I'm going to be able to do a tour. I don't know if you, Ryan, you want to come on my sort of like 3 or 4 city tour. But if we get to 40K,
maybe I'll drive you around in my big tan van.
Well, you know, there's because
or does Jacob Forte not drive anymore? Now he flies private jet.
No. Well, the truth is, like, I'm still sort of formulating exactly how it's going to go. But the part of the plan is because Carissa also wants to do a bit of a tour for her show by then, because this will be a year and a bit from now. Right, because the book is coming out in August, and I doubt we're going to do a tour around, like, right around then, because, you know, that's the sort of busy time for all entertainers and stuff like that, and I don't want to take anything from her thunder. But after that, you know, then things tend to slow down, and I figure, well, why don't we do a tour after that, after it gets a little bit less miserable, you know, after the whole, you know, past the Christmas, people are a little bit down. I don't know if that's the best time to tour, you know what I mean?
Yeah, in, like, winter storms and all that jazz.
Yeah, and all that jazz. I don't want to be like Buddy Holly, okay? So when it's safe to go around and tour again after that sort of, you know, initial cold-ass phase we call winter here in the north, then we're going to be able to do a tour. I want to, you know, like, because she's going to be doing her thing, I'm going to be doing my thing. So my plan is to essentially do live podcasts as a show, and to try to, like, when I pick cities, I'm going to invite guests on. So it's going to be like, you know, my version of Johnny Carson, a small little studio audience that we're going to get in little theaters that we rent out probably, and we're going to film it. And I'm going to transform that into, like, you know, web shows and shit like that. And I think it could be pretty fucking mega awesome. You know what I mean?
It does sound pretty awesome. And congratulations on what is it? The Kickstarter started, what, like 6 days ago?
Yeah, about a week ago.
Yeah, that's pretty ridiculous. And to think we were worried about whether or not we'd be able to hit it and whether or not you'd be able to continue to do this and everything else like that. And, you know, the great thing about our fans is that they've always been willing to support us, and we haven't always had the business savvy to know how to ask them to help us, but this worked.
Or just the right pitch, you know what I mean? Like, because the thing that I've learned over the years is it's not always necessarily about what you want to write, it's about what people want to read. That's a bit different, you know. Like, what would Jacob like to write about? I don't know, probably tons of crazy things, but what is it you guys want to hear? And The Bible Stories is probably the first seriously fan-driven book that I've ever considered. And the response is sort of like, it's clear. I'm like, that was the right move. I asked everybody else what they wanted, and I acquiesced to their desires.
And now everything is awesome.
All I had to do was submit. Submit to you, the masses. I feel strange, prostituted in a way. The crazy thing about it is that every day, you know, I'm going and I'm trying to promote this thing. And I feel like everyone's bidding for the next year of my life. It's kind of weird.
In a good way.
Yeah. No, in a good way, of course. It's like an auction. Well, it's in a good way because it's doing well. If it was doing bad, I'd probably be depressed right now. It'd be a very different show. Welcome to the show. Oh.
Please, please, guys, please.
I want to keep doing this, please. Luckily, that's not the plea I'm going to be having. The plea's going to be like, hey, I want to actually add some cool stuff. And the great thing about it, too, and I think this is what surprised a lot of people when I announced that I was self-publishing, and this is not doing it Lulu style or any of those bullshit kind of websites that try to do it for you and it comes out being crappy. No. I'm pre-ordering a shitload of them. From, like, you know, like, this is wholesale publishing. We are technically going to be a publisher. Real, like, shit. And that's awesome.
Yeah, we always tend to, like, I remember when we ran a t-shirt company. Yeah, and when we ran an internet website company, we do that too.
Yep. Well, yeah, I have definitely learned a lot of lessons from that one. But what's cool about this one, because when we did the t-shirt thing, we just stayed at home. That's bad. Right? You got to move. You got to travel around. We should have gone to shows.
We really should have.
Back. Yeah. That would have sold it. I mean, it's not like the product that we made was bad. It's just that we were just too stuck in the virtual world, man. And part of this money that's coming out is to, in order to get out of the virtual world. Like, I want to go into the real one, interact with people. And, you know, I figure if I did a great show and outside there's a booth with a bunch of books, like, you know, the books that I bring, I think people would pick them up because it's, you know, I know they're going to because of the response so far, at least. Like, I worked like a dog on that fucking cover, and for a reason. I wanted you guys to sort of, like, see the image that was in my head about this thing and see, like, and it was good. All right, enough of that. Let's get into our other bits of good news. Because I'm in such a great mood, you know, essentially because we are successful as of now and I want to increase that success, I thought, well, why don't I include other good news about the way that large organized religions are starting to kind of crumble under their own weight a little bit. And first up, comes from a high-profile divorce. I mean, who didn't see this coming? Where Katie Holmes decides to break up with Tom Cruise just as he turns 50, and when he's out of town filming a movie, she's like, I'm getting the fuck out of here. I'm taking my 6-year-old daughter, and I want sole custody, and your religion is freaky and creeping me out.
Yeah, I was actually kind of surprised. I mean, I didn't see it coming at all because she seemed so, like, completely brainwashed and into the whole thing. I remember I used to read a lot of celebrity websites back when they first got together because my website was kind of based off of, you know, like the superficial.com and whatwouldtylerdurdendo.com. So I read all the sarcastic, ridiculous stuff about when she went in and was basically like she disappeared for a couple of weeks, just completely off the, like, she goes, meets up with Tom Cruise, and then for 2 weeks nobody knows where the fuck she is or what's going on. The family's like, what the fuck is happening? Where the hell did Katie Holmes go? And then she reappears, and she's got a new Scientologist manager. She's got a new Scientologist minder, and she's in love with Tom Cruise. And then they...
Yeah, she just went kind of through the Tom Cruise wash cycle.
She did. She did.
Did you ever read that book by Neil Strauss, The Game, Penetrating the World of Pickup Artists?
No, I looked at it a couple of times, and I would feel dirty reading it because I hate it and its methodology and that whole concept
of negging and stuff like
that.
Oh, it's so bad. It's so bad. But you remember back in the day where I thought I wanted to write a book on dating, and it was just sort of like part of the research, if you want. But there's actually a section where he talks about meeting Tom Cruise and what that was like. Like, what kind of a guy Tom Cruise is. And I guess that the part that freaked him out the most was that, you know, the guy in the movies? That's the way that Tom Cruise tries to portray himself 24/7. And you're sort of like, I mean, I've met a lot of performers and things like that. And they talk to me about this whole issue they have whenever their performer cells start taking over their actual cells, mm-hmm. like where they can't separate the two. And Tom Cruise seems to me as a guy who's just really stepped over that line and just, you know, just believes in the craziness now. And I think that his whole bubble of belief, his sort of like energy couch jumping insanity can actually kind of get to you.
Like get to you in a positive way?
I think so, because, you know, I think it's for people are kind of like ready. I don't want to say willing to be believers, but they're willing to kind of be seduced in a way.
Well, you can't deny that he's a charismatic person. You don't become like the main leading man of Hollywood. I think I can't remember if it was this year or last year. He was number one, like the most highest. He made the most money in Hollywood, like he's the actor that made the most, and he was like he made twice as much as like number two. So he's
the reason is because he also takes the cut of the movies that he makes because he's so involved in them.
Yeah, he runs his shit and he runs it well. And you know,
it's a machine. Tom Cruise is an engine.
And it's kind of creepy because that engine is directly connected. Like when I talk about Tom Cruise, it's like on one hand, I got to figure that, you know, he's probably a nice guy. he seems very charismatic and likable and everything else like that. But when you think about how connected he is to Scientology and how much of a factor it is in his life. I mean, there are rumors out there that he's basically the number two or number three guy in the Church of Scientology. And when you think about all the evil things that Scientology, like read about Sea Org, read about all the other shady stuff that Scientology's been up to, all of the brainwashing that goes on, all of the harassment. I mean, how do you separate the evil that a church does like that from a guy that's supposedly running the whole thing?
Well, it's tough because, you know, here's the funny thing. David Miscavige, the guy we always talk about running Scientology, is not technically the president. It's just that the president is just some dude. I don't know what, like Javinsky or I don't even remember his fucking name. Anyways, it's just some guy who pretty much stays out of the limelight, especially seeing how he got arrested in Germany a number of years ago, and they wanted to put him in jail for like 50 fucking years. It was crazy. Scientology paid his bail. He fucking fled Germany and that kind of stuff. So he's been laying low, and no one's heard of what the fuck he's been up to for years. So while that president is laying low, which is a very Scientology thing to do, by the way, David Miscavige is Mr., you know, the big-ass bully who's come around and who's pretty much grabbed all the power. And it's a pretty freaky thing because even in the church, like what has happened as a result of that is lots of people who are still believers in L. Ron Hubbard, who they view as a kind of messianic figure. Even people who still believe are like, I have to get out of this church. This is just getting crazy. Even these nutbags are saying that it's getting crazy.
Well, it's funny because it kind of ties into like what goes on with the Catholic Church a lot. Is like most, I don't think you're going to find very many Catholics that are like, oh yeah, Vatican, thumbs up, two thumbs up. They're doing a great job.
They're doing great.
I really like the way that they're running the church, and I still believe that, you know, they are the arbitrator.
I really have bad news for you. There's a video I should show you. I was compiling this because remember how I said I was thinking about doing a show? Part of the show is really kind of like me making collages of videos because I watch a lot of Christian videos and, you know, they're pretty boring, but every once in a while they'll say something that's just gold. And one of them was from the Young Catholics. It was like this little group of people who were like, ask your questions and then we'll answer them in a fun video. And one of them was saying like, why should I listen to the Pope? And they're like, because the Pope is awesome. It's pretty much their answer. And they're like, you don't need to think about things. The greatest gift Jesus ever gave us was the papacy.
Yeah, I don't know about that. I really don't know about that.
These are Catholics. These are the people that continue to give money to this institution. I don't want to transition to them because we're going to be talking about them so much in the next section. I want to stick to Scientology now.
Yeah. I was just saying it's interesting that now you have Scientologists out there who are the same where they'll say, oh, you know, the religion changed my life. It's totally for a force for good. But the organization behind it, like the official church, they're fucked up. They're creepy. So that's an interesting kind of crack that's appeared.
Well, look, okay, let me give you a scenario, all right? We always joke about me starting my own cult and stuff like that. So let's just play on that whole scenario. I'll be an L. Ron Hubbard-like character, and then we're going to kind of like go through what would probably be a very likely way that it would develop. Does that sound like a fun exercise?
Sure.
Okay. So let's say young me decides to do like L. Ron Hubbard and say, I think that the best way to make money is to start a religion, which is literally a quote from him in a TV interview. So I decide that I'm going to start a cult. So I guess in my cult, okay, I got it. I've been thinking about this for a long time. The most woo-woo idea I've ever had in my life is that I believe that well, no, I don't believe this, but I think that a way around the Fermi paradox, do you know what the Fermi paradox is?
No.
Okay. The Fermi paradox is basically this whole idea of if there are this many planets in the solar system, and there are this many stars, and there are that many, there's this much potential for life due to the Drake equation, even in a conservative estimate, it should still be teeming with enough life that we should be kind of hearing some of it by now. Do you hear what I mean? Like, we should be picking up on signals. that should be coming our way. But we have not. And people are kind of asking, well, what the fuck? So my whole thing, like the really hippy dippy on the, you know, like pretty much my Deepak Chopra kind of like quasi idea was that, well, since the universe all started from singularity, perhaps there's a degree of entanglement that we haven't quite necessarily discovered. And in that entanglement, maybe there's a way to hide or to put messages there. Okay? This is a very bullshit idea, but we'll use this as the basis for my religion where I say I have uncovered messages from aliens and they want you to do... Okay, this is the part where maybe I need you. What do the messages say?
Give money to the Jacob Fortin Church.
Okay. All right, but why though? We're going to need a little bit more, and I'll explain to you why we need a little bit more.
Okay, so well, the message will be, here is the way for you to be happy.
Happy, I like it.
Every misery on earth is caused by people living apart from what we're telling you to live like.
Yes,
in this
I like this.
Secret message.
I like this.
And anybody that doesn't live like this is pretty much guaranteed to just continue to be miserable. And the reason that Africa is terrible is because yeah, they all turned from the message of the intergalactic entanglement word.
Okay, cool.
What do you like? How do you like that?
I like it because it's got a couple elements that I think are going to make my point later on. So we've got this whole, we want you to be happy. The other part that I think is missing, though, is a kind of message of false hope, which I think is important. So maybe something like the message is telling us that human all civilizations tend to go through these growing pains, and they always have this danger of self-destruction, because I kind of want to play on this whole eschatological tendency of most religions who are very apocalyptic. Of saying that
you need a doomsday if it's going to be a good one.
Yeah, if it's going to be a good one, it needs a bit of a doomsday. So, you know, there's a strong possibility of that doomsday, but the alien message is telling us that if you live the way that I tell you to live, that's not going to happen. What do you think?
It's not bad, or maybe you can just change it to, if you live the way that we tell you to live, when the doomsday does happen, you will end up in the ultimate universe.
Right, true. You know what? Well, one of the things that I just put up recently was a video from the Heaven's Gate cult that is sort of trending and recently surfaced. I don't know if you saw this. It's the dude from the Heaven's Gate cult who's just basically talking to people. And you know, like, here's one of the freaky things about the Heaven's Gate cult, all right? When the main guy, I guess his name was Bo, I'm trying to remember. I wanted to do a show about this, but, you know, we'll just deal with the gist of it. When the main Heaven's Gate cult guy and his then wife met and believed that they were celestial beings, they went years having only one follower. Now let me ask you something. You've been a fucking cult leader for a few years and you have one follower. At what point are you going to say, that's it, I think I'm wrong?
Yeah, it reminds me of there's some video podcast things that I've checked out where like a guy has had like hundreds and hundreds of videos and they all have like, you know, 23 viewers. And I just don't even understand. On the internet, that's tantamount to just talking to yourself.
It really is. 23 views that lasted 14 seconds.
Yeah, probably.
Or maybe him viewing it 23 times, which is not unlikely.
Quite possibly. I mean, every time I put up a video, I always watch it at least like 10 or 15 times, just obsessively.
Well, yeah, you have no choice. I mean, everyone's a narcissist to some degree. Do you think we've fairly covered the basis of this quasi-religion I've just started?
Yeah, it's not bad. I'm digging it so far. I mean, honestly, I think I talked about this the last time you brought it up, your whole like message in a quantum entanglement. It's okay, I guess. But everything else up and beyond that, and like, who am I to talk? Because I'm pretty sure you could that's a good cult foundation.
It's a fine one. You know, other people have, I mean, like the Heaven's Gate people, they even had less foundation. They're just like, we're celestial beings and we're going to tell you what to do.
But this is what I mean. I think to a certain degree, like, it's too scientific.
Oh, I see. It's almost like a person would almost do too much research and then find out that I'm full of shit.
Yeah, because you know, one of the important things that you got to do when you create a new religion is you got to make sure that it's so fuzzy that there's no real way to prove it wrong.
Mm, okay, all right, fine, but let's not go into those details. We'll talk about my later bullshit cult another day. And by the way, if anyone's got a great idea for a name, because I would really love to make a joke cult as a kind of fun project, you just send me a little message if you think you have a good name for it. Because mm-hmm. that would be a fun experiment. But we'll just call this one Entanglementology.
That's terrible.
Well, you got something better, jackass?
I have criticism. That's about it.
Oh, great. Well, that's all you do. You're a professional criticizer.
I am, literally.
No, literally, you are.
Uh-huh.
Why do I even... Yeah.
Literally.
That's why I have you on the show. I need someone to criticize my massive ego.
You suck.
Okay, so entanglementism, is that better?
Sure.
All right, entanglementism essentially starts off small. It's just you and me for a little while, and we have one follower for a number of years. Almost become discouraged, but then we hit on a real idea. And part of that real idea, by the way, if you never notice, when does a religion actually start to get big? And this is a really important factor, is that, you know, for you and I who create the religion, we don't really believe in it. That's, I doubt many founders of religions believe in it wholeheartedly. They're obviously exploiting it. Do some research on Joseph Smith and Muhammad, and you'll find out just how exploitable it is. It's pretty much a kind of ticket for you to do whatever the fuck you want. Hey, I want to marry a 9-year-old girl. Well, 6-year-old that time, but I want to fuck her when she's 9. So I decreed it. God said it's okay.
I'm going to take all of my followers' wives. Just all of them. Got to catch them all.
Got to catch them all. Got to catch them all. Got to catch them all. And it's quite amazing because, you know, when people kind of surrender themselves and they're like, you are our shepherd. Well, you're going to be fucking some sheep. That's what shepherds do. They fuck their own sheep. No offense to anybody who's a shepherd who listens to the show. Do you think there's even one?
Maybe.
Maybe. I doubt it, though.
Figure, well, here's the whole thing. You got to figure it like this. People who are listening to podcasts are in a situation where listening to podcasts is convenient for them, you know, like different jobs put you in a different kind of position to listen to more or less. And I would imagine that a shepherd or like somebody in like a Brokeback Mountain type situation, like out in the range, like doing your whatever the hell they did in that movie, they'd have lots of times to listen to.
I think you're thinking about butt sex.
Butt sex and podcasts.
Perhaps somebody's having butt sex while listening to our podcast right now.
That'd be kind of cool. I could like that.
I don't think it's right. I don't think anybody should be listening to me while they're having sex.
Yeah, it's a little bit creepy.
It's not that kind of podcast. What are you doing? You shouldn't be getting off on this. Something is wrong with you. Go check yourself out. Yeah, you're a broken monkey. Okay, but let's go back to our religion, because I'm still trying to prove a point here. It's taken a while, but it's fine, because it's a happy podcast. So in all this religion, the one point you have to kind of touch upon is people have to really believe that it's true. And it does take a charismatic motherfucker. And like people will tell you, at least when it comes to Joseph Smith, at least, that he was handsome. He was charismatic, and he was going to fuck your wife whether or not you wanted him to. So it might as well be decreed by God, right?
if that makes you feel better, then all the power to you.
Whatever makes you sleep at night. But that's just the kind of people. And when they realize that if you latch on your charisma to religion, it spells dollars. It's just, you know, it's a time and tested formula, and you know, like the Church of Scientology has applied this formula. Now there are people inside of it that really believe in many of the principles of it, including, you know, people who've said that, oh well, it helped me get out of my depression. So imagine in our cult, somebody who goes into the cult genuinely depressed comes out of it, finds some fucking meaning into who knows what, finds his own meaning, and then has a really strong experience and tells you, entanglementism saved my life. And who's going to deny a personal experience like that? It does seem real. So all of a sudden, hey, you can build on those kinds of experiences. I have a whole bunch of fucking people that come back to me and said that entanglementism saved my life, and all of a sudden we're done. We're good. We're now a religion, and we can start collecting and being tax exempt and allotting us these ridiculous salaries for who knows what. Like, it's up to you to decide, by the way, because this religion is still forming. So as a high priest of it, what do you want your monies to go into, Mr. Harkness?
My pocket. So I can continue to spread the good word.
Oh, yeah, that's all you're going to do? I don't believe you. I think that you would have a massive yacht.
Yeah, and maybe I would fill that yacht with believers, and they would service the yacht, they would clean it, they would keep it going.
That's kind of what L. Ron Hubbard did, though. He had massive yachts. He created an organization where people have designations like the Navy, which he deluded himself into believing that he was in a substantial way, other than some poop deck dude. And there you go. There you have it. You have a weird organization that can travel into international waters, and you can be a king of your own followers and what you say is law. You could even throw them overboard and it doesn't matter.
Sounds pretty good.
Well, it does kind of sound like the ultimate weird alpha male monkey fantasy, doesn't it? Hence the dangerous power of religion. Stay away from it, kids. It's worse than drugs. Way worse than drugs.
So fortunately, Katie Holmes did escape. Or she's in the process of escaping.
She's in the process of escaping, because this is a long thing. Although what was really interesting is that the ex-wife of that president guy that I've been telling you has been hiding in the year for years went on the record and said that in order for Katie Holmes to have actually done this, a significant amount of subterfuge must have been involved. So we're talking like cell phone, disposable cell phones, meetings in places where there were no recording devices, swapping cars and shit like that. Like, what I'm saying is that Katie Holmes is going to be able to play Katie Holmes in a movie version of Not Without My Daughter, but with Scientology.
I don't know, because look at it like this. Nicole Kidman never said beep about nothing. And she had all the reasons in the world. Apparently, she's completely cut out of her kids' lives. They don't call
yeah, Nicole,
her mom.
You know what Nicole Kidman's reaction to Tom Cruise dumping her was?
What's that?
To be in the fetal position and crying. I don't think that Nicole Kidman has any guts. I'm actually, you know, here's the truth. When I read what Katie Holmes was doing, I swear to you, she became sexy again. There was an interview right before she kind of tried to separate her, where she had said that she had never felt more sexy and more in control of her own life. And you know what? It's probably because she was in the midst of Operation Get the Fuck Out of Dodge.
Operation Independence. Operation Save My Daughter from a Crazy Cult.
I mean, do you think it's a coincidence that Suri turning 6 is just around the time when the Scientologists get their claws in her?
No. I mean, it's very clear from everything that I've been reading. And once again, I guess this is the problem. What do you believe when it comes to these gossip rags and everything else like that? But everybody is saying that this divorce has everything to do with Scientology. As far as Katie and Tom's actual Tomcat's actual relationship, who knows? But the Scientology part was fucking foul enough to make her pack up and run.
You know, it's too bad that really clever, you know, sort of like word combination is just lost. Tomcat's cool.
It's not bad. It's not as good as Bennifer. I like Bennifer.
You liked Bennifer?
Yeah.
Why?
I don't know. I dug it.
You're a very strange man. That was a very weird time in the world's life. You know? Back when we were obsessed with Ben Affleck, of all people.
Yeah, but there's no sign as to what, like, here's my bet. She's going to say, I'm going to keep my mouth shut, just give me my daughter. And since Tom already has two kids of his own, then maybe they'll pull this off, and they'll just have to move on, and Suri Cruz will not be, the new messianic figure for the Church of Scientology.
Well, you know, it's also interesting to note that Rupert Murdoch effectively declared war on Scientology not long before. This is the president or the owner of Fox.
I heard he made a couple of comments on Twitter, but Jesus Christ. I mean, let's not blow it out of proportion here. It's not like he's fighting Scientology like Fox News fights Barack Obama or something.
No, but you have to kind of understand that when the big dog says stuff like that, it is an open invitation. I think if I was Rupert Murdoch, all right, one of the things that I might say is that it's pretty, like, you can divert attention away from the crazy things that one religion does by focusing on another crazy religion. You know, like, there was this one governor who was, I forget in what state, maybe it's Louisiana, I forget, but she was trying to get faith schools to have vouchers, and then it turns out that she found out that some of those vouchers were going to Muslim schools, and she was really upset about that.
Oh, religion.
Right, like, you know what, religions always eat each other. That you kind of have to put them in, like, a little cage, you know, WWE style, and just wait to see who crawls out, and then we'll just, whoever crawls out will bash with the stick of reason, and it'll be done. So let's send these fucking dogs against each other. It's like, sure, Rupert Murdoch, who's an owner of one of the biggest propaganda machines in the history of mankind, take on Scientology, because Scientology will take you on, and you can waste each other's resources fighting one another. That's fine by me, and that's why today's podcast is so encouraging. And that's not even the tip of the good news. We have more good news. Are we ready to transition to the good news?
Sure.
Okay. Here's the fucking fantastic news. So if you haven't been paying attention, there's something called VataLeaks. If you Google this, you'll find that it's essentially a bunch of documents that have been leaked to the press and the general public that detail a number of juicy things coming right out of the Vatican, all right? And it ranges in terms of its juiciness. And where it really all stems from is that a couple years ago, there was talk that the private bank of the Vatican Bank, I think it's also called the Institute of Works of Religion. Yeah, Works of Religion, that's a hilarious one. Anyways, they were, this one guy was trying to push for more transparency. His name was Gaudi Tadeshi, and this guy had, like, some pretty serious economic credentials. He gets nominated for the Vatican Bank, and he decides, I'm going to clean this place out. And what he soon discovers is, like, one of those Dan Brown level of fucking crazy conspiracies, where then he has to slowly, stealthily steal documents from the Vatican and keep it in his private home while he was writing this expose after he was fired when he could not institute his, his attempt to create, like, a more transparent organization because there was so much organized crime and money laundering happening within that bank. And a couple of weeks ago, or maybe a week or two ago, his apartment got raided. And the police got hold of these documents. The documents that he was keeping in case shit went down. So the Vatican, in a crazy panic, went to the Italians and said, you need to send us back all of those documents and you can't read any of it. And the police is like, yeah, we'll get back to you.
Well, that's nice. Back in the day, they just would have handed it over.
Well, that's why things have kind of changed. And besides, it wouldn't change the fact that, Gaudi is still alive, although he has said that he's very, very fearful for his life. You know, there's a couple of other people, former Vatican officials, that when they went to prison or they were involved with the law, were dead. Like, one former guy was poisoned while in prison.
Well, I've heard something about a former pope that was talking about cleaning up the banks, and this was,
Before John Paul II. This is the guy right before him.
Yeah. Oh, so you know a little bit more about this. He was going to clean everything up, and, like, right after he was pontificated, He was like, I'm going to do this, and then he just turned up dead. That was the end
of
that. Well,
let me give you an example of why that might happen. There was a girl, like there's it's not just one scandal, because part of this scandal you also have to realize has its there's like it's sort of like four different scandals at once. So there's this former Vatican Bank officer dude. Then there's also the butler of the Pope who released a whole bunch of private letters right around the same time. And there is still a number of these informants still in the Vatican who have not been identified. They're only identified as Maria collectively. But there's no one has really fully come out, partially because they're fearful. But one of the documents also suggested that a young woman who had disappeared in, I think it was the 1970s, I'm not quite sure, but she was apparently being held hostage because the Vatican was refusing to transfer a number of its monies over to the mafia, who have been using the bank to launder their heroin monies for many years. And when they refused to do that, this young woman, who was a daughter of one of the, you know, clerks who worked at the Vatican, when she disappeared, there's reason that the people believe that essentially when she was killed, because they worked out a different arrangement. I guess she was killed, then they kind of acquiesced, and in order to forgive the whole affair, that mafia boss was buried in the Vatican itself, which I guess he still wanted to be because he thought it was consecrated ground or something. Apparently, there's talk that her body is also buried along with him in order to cover up her murder.
That's just weird. Why would you... It's pretty like the worst body hiding ever.
Look, these are not geniuses, okay? Maybe they're not that great at crime. And maybe there's not a lot of burial plots available in a tiny city-state. Mm. The crazy thing, too, is that the butler who released all those documents is currently in Vatican jail. And you know what? I would be really angry of being in Vatican jail. I'm like, you are not a government. How can you have a jail? That's not right.
It just goes to show that you can have whatever you can trick people into thinking you're allowed to have, you're just allowed to. There's no, it's that funny thing about power, right? Is that it's kind of, it is both very real and very imaginary. And sometimes you're just able to do things because people will let you get away with it.
Well, I was trying to find out a little bit more about the leaks themselves, because there is a book that's out about it, because there was a journalist who was in the middle of all of this who wrote a book, and he apparently was so paranoid that he kept the book itself on a USB key that he had in a chain around his neck so that no one would be able to rifle through his apartment and steal it. Like, do you understand what I mean? Like, this is Dan Brown can't write this shit. this is some crazy shit, right? So anyways, this book's basically come out. The Vatican is on damage control. They've sent pretty much the head of the Opus Dei to try to seal this thing shut. Again, like I said, Dan Brown can't write this because it's that nutty. And now they're going around. There's the number two of the Vatican, Cardinal Tarcisio Bertone, came out to the media, and his best response was that the devil made everyone do it. All the devil's fault.
That's not a bad answer, though, from a religious organization. It's like, well, yeah, sins. You know, we all suck. This is why you need to pray harder. Give us more money.
It's the devil. Yeah, well, you know, speaking of money, another thing that was really interesting that I found in all this digging is that apparently, according to some of these leaked letters, too, a punishment for kind of speaking out against church corruption was being sent to America, where the American church, especially in Boston, has cost the Vatican hundreds of millions of dollars because of all the sex scandals that they can't keep quiet over there. So if you were a bad boy, they sent you there to deal with a bad press.
So your name would get all like wrapped up in it.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Like, there was this one guy who was working for the Vatican Bank. He had sent a letter to the Pope, I think it was John Paul, but maybe it was Benedict. I forget which one. And he was basically saying, like, okay, we need to do something about this because this is going to come back, blow up in our faces, and this is going to be bad. So then he was sent to Washington. That was his punishment. It's like, you have to deal now with all the sexual allegations. And you're just, you know, you have to at first giggle to yourself. And you know, like, all of us who think that the Vatican is some really super powerful organization that is invulnerable, you have to remember that the best thing about all of these leaks is that it shows the Pope to be an incompetent, impotent moron who can't prevent the corruption around him, and none of these people have a proper understanding of what the internet is and how it remembers everything you do.
And how everything will come out eventually.
Yep. Everything, your dirty ass little laundry will just come out and people will talk about it. And it, you know what? It's so juicy ass news that no one's going to ignore it. You're going to be news for all of the shit that the Vatican does and that will eventually be uncovered. Cause I think this is just the tip of the iceberg. I mean, the reason why all those people came out is that they themselves, still believers, were tired of what the Vatican was doing. And they were just sick and tired of the corruption. And that's believers who have something vested interest. Wait until everything else just comes out. We have like probably another good 50 years of just scandal after scandal. It's just going to go back through history, man. It's going to be awesome.
Yeah, I'm hoping because, you know, what seems to happen in all of these cases is I think that we can all remember when, well, not when all of the sex scandals started breaking, but when all of the child rape started really started gaining steam and getting headlines, and we were finally figuring something's going to be done about this, something is going to be different. But I mean, the Catholic Church just basically like weathered that. They hunkered down and they just went, ooh, it's like just all of the shit just slammed up against them for months and months and months, and they've gotten through it. So if you're telling me that they can kind of they can get through a tsunami of child rape, but this like financial thing is gonna completely, I mean the truth of the matter is people don't seem to care. Out of everybody who reads the newspaper and reads these articles on the internet and everything like that, there's another dozen who don't, and who don't care, or they hear
right,
it and they,
all right,
they just
but there's
shrug.
there's a reason why actually. The focus on money is probably the best news of all the bunch. It's because Italy is financially collapsing. They've been talking about taxing the church for years. And we're talking about like hundreds of millions of dollars, Ryan. And the truth is that if the Italians decided that they were going to start taxing the church, and if the church's financial, like, because the whole thing is that Europe has now been looking at their financial transactions, and they have lost a lot of ability to start, like, to invest. Like, the Vatican Bank is a for-profit institution. It makes money. It's one of the rare banks that makes money. But if it is faced with a situation where it actually starts to lose money, and where a lot of other financial institutions start saying, well, we can't support you because your money is corrupt and it's tied into all of this organized crime. In lots of countries, this allows governments to essentially freeze assets and who knows what. And this means that one of the remaining profitable branches of this institution begins to dwindle. Now, I don't need to tell you what the consequences of that are. Because running an organization like the Catholic Church costs money. There are real costs associated. And those costs, while they don't go away, profits do, and that's the good news. What you have to do to attack the church is attack its legs. And its legs is money. Without money, they're nothing. Without money, they're a debt. I mean, do you know how much it costs to keep the Vatican just operational? Or even the Sistine Chapel, like, not crumbling under the weight of itself. I mean, it's tens of thousands of dollars a day of just money that you have to throw at it to keep it up. So everything they do has a cost, and that's not going to go away. So I'm like, let's take away their fucking money. Then they will fade.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. I like that because, if you were hoping that public outrage would would take them down. I don't know. I've lost faith in the public being outraged. They aren't outraged enough.
There's well, I mean, I got to tell you, what would it take for a public to be outraged enough to do something about it? Like, hypothetically.
I don't know. I mean, as I said, like child rape.
Can you think of something worse? If not, then I'm like, I don't think
anything. Systematic child rape. No, it's hard to get worse than that. It's like, I don't know. Society just doesn't seem to care. I mean, for God's sakes, I'm going to a Cirque du Soleil show tomorrow, based on a child molester's music. People don't care.
Who?
Michael Jackson.
Oh, right. What, really? Cirque du Soleil Michael Jackson show?
Yeah. It's going to be magic.
That's pretty weird.
They're going to be, people will bring their children to it. The ultimate irony.
This is in Ottawa?
It's in Montreal.
Oh, so you're going to Montreal to see the show?
Yeah, with my mom. She wanted someone to go with, and I want my mom to be happy, so I said sure. And plus it's Cirque du Soleil, so.
Yeah. All right, whatever. I guess you get to say that you've went to a show.
This will be my second Cirque du Soleil.
I get to say, though, I one up you. I got to sneak into a Cirque du Soleil after party. That's cooler.
Yeah, that is cooler. You do win there.
Yeah, right there. And plus, you know, like when we walked in, there was a bunch of chicks with no shirts on doing crazy dances to giant projectors with like psychedelic backgrounds.
I love art.
Isn't that? But you know what? It's weird because I felt like, what am I, an Andy Warhol studio? What's going on here? You know what's funny about Andy Warhol? Mm-hmm. He's a devout Catholic, man. He went to church all the fucking time.
Yeah, I'm sure they beat it into him as a child.
Just weird. It's like, hey, you're not avant-garde. You're like a big religious conservative.
Mm. You can be both.
You know, there's lots of room for cognitive dissonance. Do you know what I mean? It's kind of like, I'll give you a good example. One of the articles that I wrote on, like very recently on the site, because I've been publishing a lot more articles recently, is that in Uganda, basically the Catholics were the only group up until recently that were actually speaking out against the Kill the Gays bill in Uganda. That has since changed in the past few weeks. They joined an ecumenical council of Anglican and evangelicals that want to resurrect the Kill the Gays bills in Uganda.
Man, this isn't good news. What happened to good news?
Oh,
I knew it. I knew it. You'd break down. You had to sandwich all the good news between a woman getting raped and not being able to have an abortion and gays in Uganda being murdered. Congratulations, Jacob. You are a liar.
Yeah, my Catholics. But no, but it's part of that whole, well, the good news is they're going to be getting a lot less funding. I mean, okay, look, you got to take a long view, guys. All right, I know that we're not winning yet. I know that in most places that aren't Sweden, we aren't the overwhelming majority as non-believers. But it's only because you are the middle children of belief history. You live in an age in which just yesterday they announced the discovery of the Higgs boson, where they're like on a either 4 or 5 sigma scale. They can be fairly confident that this motherfucker exists. On America's 4th of July, when their own particle accelerator, the Tevatron, is about to shut down, the Europeans pull it out of the fire, motherfucker. They declare real science happening. So I think at least on the eve of this, you know, we know that we're just still a witness to the awesome power of science to explain the world that we live in, and the very much not awesome power of religion to confound and confuse everyone about its awesome beauty and truth.
Yeah, I can agree with that. I like that.
Is that a good or a bad thing though? Because we still live when those forces clash. So you know what? Like the whole thing is. One of the things that I realized, and here, you know, I mentioned this on one of the podcasts I was just on, which was from Jake Farr Wharton from the Imaginary Friends show, who just had me on yesterday. So you guys can there'll be a link hopefully by the time this is up, or if not, go on the site and I'll give you a link to that interview. But one of the things that I mentioned is that the reason the good atheist is what it is that we are around to fill the non-believers who listen to it with confidence. To actually be like, yeah, feels good to be a non-believer, to have one less assumption than people who believe in nonsense. Congratulations. Now, you should feel fucking proud, because even though that doesn't seem like a big deal, the majority of human beings on this planet that have ever lived are not part of that club. So, you are. Now, you know, the great news would be me telling you that we're the majority, but I don't think I'll be around when that happens.
We can hope.
Well, yeah, maybe, but I'll be pretty old and decrepit by then.
Maybe you'll be a brain in a jar.
Yes.
Connected to the internet.
Yes. By then, maybe you don't even need a jar. Maybe by then, the same electrical pattern that formed your brain could be simulated so that I don't need to have any, you know, sort of biological component to it, which is a big major hassle.
But that's not you. I hate that, like, everybody talking about transferring their consciousness into, like, data. I'm like, who cares? And then a clone gets to continue to exist pretending it's me.
No, it is still you.
No, it's not.
Look, is you just the goo that makes you?
Yes.
Then you're wrong. I'm sorry to say that you're wrong. The you is a sustained electrical field that makes up a kind of amalgam of your personality. The rest is just a vessel for it. It is goo. It can come and go. But if I was to replicate that vessel, I got news for you, pal. That is you.
I know, but let me ask you this. Okay, they replicate you on the internet, and you're standing there after the procedure, and they go, okay, Jacob, now we're going to stick a needle in your eye and inject something into your brain that kills you. I think you would have a problem with that, because you still being alive recognize the fact that you were you and computer you is something else.
Well, can I just make a suggestion then?
Sure.
Can I say that at the moment in which my consciousness is split, right at that moment is when now that consciousness will differ, because the experiences are different. I still exist in my biological body, which means on a perpetual state, things are, you know, altering. And now this internet version is experiencing something a little bit different than I. But I wouldn't say, A, terminate this computer program because I don't like him. And it wouldn't be, B, terminate this organic being because the computer version of me doesn't like me either. Can one version of me just not perish biologically, but still have a version of me eternal live on? I would say that is still me, but me in a world that is different from my own biological experience.
Sure, I just say it's another you. And, you know, that's okay if that's what you're going for. But
right, but it's probably a better me.
To me, it's cheating on immortality. That's soft immortality.
Soft. For you, it's like if it's not a stream of perpetual consciousness is being experienced by some definition of you, it's no good. And I would say that if that was true, the you version that would be electronic would have a very great disdain for the biological you that was some kind of nostalgia, and it would try to murder you. So my suggestion to you would be to soften your view, sir, else you fucking face the wrath of, like, computer consciousness you.
Well, if he doesn't like me, he can suck it.
Well, if he doesn't like you, then really, you know, you have a problem there. You need to look at you, because your virtual reality you doesn't like you. And that's weird. I know that the virtual reality me would love me and try to make sure that I lived a comfortable life as my vessel perished.
You could do radio shows with yourself.
I don't know if that'd be good, because I'd be constantly interrupting me. It's like, yeah, I don't know what to do about the, you know, sort of like the other me. Although I suppose on off days where I really didn't want to host, I'd co-host. Maybe vice versa. It would be perfect. Yeah. Although it would be very samey. Very, very samey. Unless the internet world of my consciousness is so different that, you know, internet me becomes very jaded and evil. He's like, yeah, humanity is nothing but porn and more porn.
If he's internet you and goes out on the internet, yeah, he probably would think that.
Okay, well, you know what? I think that pretty much wraps up the show. in terms of I think we've had enough tangents.
It's true. It was a tangent-ridden show. Oh my.
No, it's good though. I mean, like I said, it was filled with good news, despite the fact that some bit of bad news managed to squeeze itself in there. A reminder that we shall always be vigilant, because the shit's not. It's still not perfect, and we need to, we need to fight for that world. That's why, every day when you think to yourself, "Oh, why should I give a shit?" Well, even though things are getting better, I think we can push that thing along a little bit. You know what I mean? Like, by our own involvement, by people sort of like coming out as atheist, being confident about it. Talking about it. I know there's one fan who messaged me today because he was having like a whole bunch of people on his page being like, "Oh, stop bashing religion. You're intolerant." And he messaged me, and you know what? Like he was bashing something that I thought was like, yeah, you should bash that. I told him, look, maybe you're going to be called intolerant by other people. Maybe you're going to be, someone's going to say, "Oh, well, you should just live and let live." But you live in a world that is still has hate-sponsored bigotry and genocide and torture and all these kinds of things in the name of religion, and you don't need to put up with that shit. That no one should be able to silence you. If you have a problem with it, you should be able to talk about it. And if someone says that you should be nicer, you can say, well, you know what, when they're nicer, I'll be nicer. I'm just flinging their own venomous shit back at them. So if you've got a problem with that, have a problem with them. Have a problem with child molesters, not the guy who's constantly yelling out, "Fuck these child molesters." You know what I mean? Priority straight, everybody. Okay, and before we go, I'd like to thank everybody who's been a contributing member of the show, all you hardcores that continue to contribute. And we've actually had even still more people sign up. While we've even done the campaign, which has been really helpful, because it takes a couple of months before we get our payout. So it's like, yeah, we've made money virtually.
In theory,
we've made a bunch of money. But until then, it's still very much, ramen time.
Good thing ramen's delicious.
It is pretty delicious. So, I want to thank everybody who's contributing. And guys, like, if you have not picked up a copy of Bible Stories, go on a Kickstarter campaign, and even at just $10, that makes a big difference. Like, the more people contribute, the more visibility we have. We've managed to be able to be on the popular page for publishing since day two, and I want to keep that going, because I want the Kickstarter community to actually come on board. Like, something like 98% of all the funding has been from you guys. But if we can get popular, continue to be popular, we're going to get more and more traffic from like other sources. And, that could be exciting too. Like, what if this fucking get takes off? What if somebody else talks about it? So, if you're supporting it, support it financially. If you can't, go on the site and like it, just on your Facebook, like it, tell your friends about it. And that's the way that we're going to make sure that this thing goes like mega huge. And, I'm going to be able to do, once we get even to 30K, I'm going to be able to do a much better version of the website, which has been needing an overhaul since I've tried to do everything myself, which sucks. So the future is bright. So that's good news, right? Everybody gets to have that sort of little yay. We did it, guys. Good Atheist gets to continue, and the future is bright, and it's all thanks to you, and keep supporting it, because, who knows what the fuck I'm going to do. It's going to keep getting better. All right, with that, my name is Jacob Forjan.
And I'm Ryan Harkness.
Have a good Atheist Day, everybody.